And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. Hour three of Morning Drive is off and running here on a Thursday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live this morning from Bridgestone Arena. Busy hour, including Adam Kaplan. Bottom of the hour. Stick to sports at 8:45 as we welcome in our man Joe Rexrode, columnist for the Tennessean, to talk all things Nashville sports. Rex, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great, man. It's one of the best days of the year in sports. I'm here in Columbus for some interviews, press conferences, and having my attention distracted by all the games that are going on at the same time.
So let's get it. Speaking of March Madness, let's get into it a little bit from the Belmont perspective. Probably the biggest win in school history two nights ago for Rick Byrd. One, are you of the belief that they have a real chance against Maryland? And then two, is this a team that can maybe be the Loyola Chicago of this year's tournament?
Hey, I mean, you know, crazier things have happened. I mean, I think a lot of people who, you know, especially around the country who hadn't watched this team, I've got a lot of comments from people like, man, that is a good team. Like, yes, it is a good team. I mean, first of all, Nick Mazinski, you know, if you watch him in that game, you think about the fact that he missed the Murray State game. You're talking about 15 points a game. A freshman big. I've been saying all year, how in the heck did he get out of Ohio? This kid should be in the Big Ten somewhere. He is a real weapon. And when you talk about the Maryland matchup, Bruno Fernando, I mean, I think that's a really good matchup. Usually a Belmont goes into a game like this against a Power 5 team with a big man like that, and you're like, well, there's a huge mismatch. But I don't think it is, especially if his ankle responds well. You know, obviously, it's just 2 days later. But, yeah, I do think they have a real chance, Nick. And as far as beyond that, I mean, look, the road looks like it could be awfully tough. You know, I have no idea what to expect from LSU in this tournament. You know, you tell me they're going to be bounced by Yale, I will believe you. But that's still an awfully talented, athletic, big, rebounding team that I think would certainly be a tough matchup for Belmont. You know, if they were to get by this one, you know, then what would it be if that maybe Michigan State, Duke, hey. I mean, you know, look, it's the NCAA tournament. We've seen VCU go first four to Final Four. We've seen Butler. We've seen, like you mentioned, you know, Loyola last year. Belmont has the goods to make a run like that.
Now, Joe, hopefully you pick Michigan State for your bracket, man. If you don't, I'm not your friend.
I'm not your friend anymore.
Okay. Now that the tournament has officially started today at noon, does this highlight, I'm talking here in Nashville, does this highlight the awful job that Bryce Drew did this year? Because this was a team, obviously with Darius Geis, that people pick would, one, be in a tournament, but then they can go further in the tournament because he was one of those type players. He gets injured. This team not only, struggles, they're the worst team in the SEC and probably one of the worst teams in the country. Does this now highlight the bad job that Bryce Drew did, considering, you know, what he had at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, thanks, Derek. I had finally forgotten about Vanderbilt basketball, and you have to drag me back in, man. by the way, I've got Michigan State in the Elite Eight. I can't pick them. I can't pick them against Duke.
On,
I just
Joe.
I can't do it, man. You got them in the Final Four?
Yeah, I got them winning it. Them
going
to Carolina.
Joe, Team Green Bottle, y'all.
No, but yeah, you know, it is a contrast, though, no doubt about it. And I still, it's funny, guys, if you were watching. The games last night, you know, I mean, Arizona State, I mean, St. John's was really bad, but still, you're watching the Arizona State team, they move on, they're in the tournament, they get a win, you know, they've got some good players, you know, I mean, Dort's a really good player, and you think back to Vanderbilt hammering that team without Darius Garland. I mean, that really was the moment that I was, like, completely fooled by what was to come. I was like, oh, yeah, this team's going to the NCAA tournament. Now, I thought with Garland, like you said, Derek, I thought with Garland, this was a team, had it grown through the year, could have been really dangerous right about now. But that night, I'm like, oh, well, this is, you know, they'll go like 9-9 in the SEC. They'll get in. They'll be like a, you know, like a 7 seed, something like that. And, hey, who knows? And obviously, that's not exactly how it went.
So you're in Columbus. Obviously, you know, a lot of talk about Cincinnati being 100 and some 100 miles away and some change with Tennessee there. Obviously, no threat really against Colgate, I would assume. So let's talk about the bracket and the draw. I think if they were to have to play Iowa and Purdue, I would feel much better about their matchup than if they have to play Cincinnati and Villanova, for example. What has been the talk as far as the draw goes around that pod and around that half of the bracket for Tennessee?
No, I agree with you. I mean, Iowa, you know, Iowa is a team with some talent, but they don't guard anybody, and they've struggled on the stretch. And I think if Tennessee got into that game, they'd get into transition and have a lot of fun beating Iowa by double figures. But I think it'll be Cincinnati. And, yeah, I mean, I think that is a pretty tough draw for your second game. I think Cincinnati's better than a 7 seed. And like you said, you know, hour and 40 minutes away, you figure they'll have people. I still think there's going to be so much orange here, though. I think Tennessee fans have known this, and Columbia were kind of the two most likely. And then you look at Duke, Carolina, Virginia, you figure it's probably not Columbia. So I would assume a lot of people have been prepared for this to be the spot. And I think actually that Tennessee won this spot by beating Kentucky Saturday, or else they would have been down in Jacksonville. But I think it'll be a good showing there. I think that's a tough game, more of a defensive, every possession counts game, and they're going to have to, you know, take care of the ball and take good shots. I don't think they're better, and they should win, but it's not easy. And I agree with you totally on Purdue-Villanova. Maybe Purdue will surprise me. I have them losing to Old Dominion right out of the gate. So that's my biggest upset pick of the first round. I don't buy them right now. Carson Edwards has a bad back and just throws up every half shot he sees. They've got talent. When he gets going, they are tough. But I think Villanova looks, you know, it's not vintage. It's not the Villanova of the past few years, but it's still a veteran, talented, deep team that guards and has some really good players. And I think that would be a very good matchup in the Sweet 16 for the Vols if that's what happens.
Talking with Joe Rexroad from the Tennessean here on Morning Drive. So, Joe, you look at the conferences represented in the tournament this year. The Big 12 got 8 teams, the SEC, the ACC with 7 apiece. You look at the SEC, and obviously we saw a good portion of these teams last week here at Bridgestone Arena. Do you think they need to have a strong showing collectively as a conference to validate the strong regular season and the recognition that the league got throughout the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, I still think back a couple years ago, Nick, and we were like making fun of SEC basketball. Like, this is just awful. So, I mean, even if they were to not do well, there's no question there's been progress in the league. I mean, it has gone from – I mean, we talked about the SEC 3 years ago like we're talking about the Pac-12 now. So, you know, the coaching roster has gotten better. There are a lot of good, solid programs in the league. Yeah, it would obviously be great for the league to get some of the Final Four, at least get a, you know, couple, 2-3 teams to that second weekend, maybe win a game there, you know, to be visible. But, I mean, look, the ACC has 3 national title contenders, 3 1-seeds. And so I think that's still the class, and I think you could go Big Ten, SEC, you could probably go back and forth on that. I will say, I guess Michigan State would be contenders. Kentucky, Tennessee would be contenders. Probably no one after that on either side. But I think either way, Nick, the SEC has come so far, and looks like, for the most part, you know, some programs excluded, one in our town that we wonder what the future will bring. A lot of places that things are looking up right now.
Now, taking Duke out of it, because I think everyone would be surprised if Duke doesn't make it at least to the Final Four. What would be a big surprise for you, excluding Duke? Would it be Carolina not making it to the Final Four? Would it be UT not at least making it to the Elite Eight? What would be a big surprise for you if it indeed it happened?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do think North Carolina is going to go. I think a lot of people are picking Kentucky, though. I mean, that's a heck of a – that would be a great Elite Eight matchup. Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about Tennessee, I think you hit it there. You know, Tennessee not making the Elite Eight to me would be a big surprise. And I know the last time they played, they did not look good. I mean, that, you know, they turned it over. They were, you know, they were sped up in the half court and made a lot of bad decisions. Auburn went nuts from 3, but I think that this team is built and has the experience and has last year's experience and knows what works and what doesn't. And it really should get to at least that Elite Eight game. And I picked Tennessee to beat Virginia. I mean, to me, I know Virginia just lost to UMBC. You get to that point and if Virginia's there, I don't think there's shame in that. But if Tennessee doesn't at least get there, I would be surprised. And I would call that a major disappointment. I mean, in one of the greatest seasons in school history, you know, if you get to the Final Four with this team, a Final Four banner dwarfs all SEC banners you could pile up, you know. But if you end up empty-handed in regular season, SEC tournament, and NCAA tournament, that would be a big disappointment.
Joe, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Enjoy your coverage for the tournament, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Yep. Joe Rexroad, columnist for the Tennessean. And we'll come back, get back to March Madness, all the stuff we started the show with, including I want to get this answer when we come back because you mentioned a surprise about a team. Like if Duke goes down, what other surprise would happen? Let's move off of the one line and the two line. If I told you you had to pick a team to win the national championship, not on the one and two line.
Do I have to?
Yes.
Okay.
It's probably unlikely. Mm-hmm. But there's one team that does stand out to me. We'll do that when we come back. Morning Drive here on a Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
To all our men listeners out there, I've been telling you this time and time again, 5 days a week. I've been telling you this for the last 3-4 months. About my good friends over at Cool Springs MD, over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with their experience staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of the Brentwood, Nashville, and surrounding areas here in Tennessee with improving their immune system, cough, energy levels, and cognitive functions, and more.
So
they are
mad
there
at you.
To connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And fellas, we need both, okay? And there's no better time than now to achieve a healthy lifestyle. What are you waiting on, man? You hear me? You're listening? Make that call. Pull out your cell phones. Here's the number. Remember it. Put it in your phone. 615-660-6900. Make an appointment again. 615-660-6900. Or visit the website at coolspringsmd.com.
Welcome back in the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game, live this morning from Jack Daniel's Barrel House. What is next for the Tennessee Titans in free agency? We'll find out. Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM NFL analyst, former NFL insider for ESPN. He's going to join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. But I mentioned going to the break, if we are to move off of the one line and the two line, who do you think has the best chance to make noise, make a deep run, maybe win a national championship, crash a Final Four? And I'm just going to go recency bias, boys, and this could be wrong because I get caught up in it sometimes. But last week here at Bridgestone Arena, two teams really stood out, one with a tournament, one all season long. I would say the 3-seed LSU. I know that's not a popular choice these days with what's going on at Baton Rouge, but also the 5-seed Auburn. Maybe I'm being a little biased with the SEC, but I think LSU Auburn would be, well, first of all, they're the only two teams I have in my Elite Eight that are not a 1 or a 2 seed.
Yeah.
So those would be my two.
That's in the championship game, you believe?
Well, he's saying, who do you think can win the national title?
Oh,
it's not
okay.
A 1 or a 2 seed. Okay. And my only issue with both of those, I mean, listen, there's tons of talent at LSU, and Auburn's hot, so those are the reasons to like them. Mm-hmm. Problem is Auburn will shoot themselves out of a basketball game in 2 seconds if they just aren't making threes. And let's face it, they didn't really have a great entirety of the regular season. They were good at the end. LSU, I just think it's too much distractions to ask a bunch of young people to win a national title with their coach being suspended. I just think it's asking a lot. Now, maybe it galvanizes them. Who knows? I was looking back at Final Fours of recent memory. We've had Syracuse and Jim Boeheim as a 10 seed make it to the Final Four recently. Didn't Michigan State and Tom Izzo make it to the Final Four as like a 7 seed a couple of years ago? Yeah, Michigan State in 2015 made it as a 7 seed. So if you're trying to come up with the formula for a lower-seeded team to make it, you probably need a Hall of Fame level coach, right? Jim Boeheim. I think UConn won it as a 7 seed, right? The whole thing. You sort of need high-level talent, right? Michigan State's a high-level recruiter. Syracuse is a high-level recruiter. So I think if you're going to look at teams like that, you kind of need to look at programs that are big-time coaches. Like Villanova as a six seed, right, is a perfect example. National championship coach, big-time program, used to winning, comfortable in March. That's the type of pick that makes sense. Villanova would make sense there. I like Florida State because they have elite-level athletes. They play good defense. They're physical. They've got a coach who's in the tournament every year. I don't know how much I trust Leonard Hamilton deep in the tournament, but Florida State's one that I would probably circle and say, you know, keep an eye on that one. The other one I'd really like is Virginia Tech. If Justin Robinson is healthy, you've got a great coach in Buzz Williams, and you've got a pretty darn good basketball team that's probably top 10 if Justin Robinson plays the entire season, their best player. So Virginia Tech and Florida State might be my two picks, along with maybe Villanova.
I have at least four teams that I think that are not one or two seeds. I know Kansas. They hadn't played well as of late. And Kansas just disappoints you just about every year because every year they have a top five recruiting class or a top 10 recruiting class, and then they get in the tournament, and they're out in the second or third round.
They check all the boxes, though.
Yeah, but I think Kansas is – it's because they're coached extremely well.
Yep.
I think that's one team for me that has the potential to win a national championship. I always go back to Boeheim and Syracuse because of that.
Yeah, you really
that
like
zone,
that team.
Yeah, that zone defense they play. It's hard for
you saw the news though, right? They benched Frank Howard for the first game. Uh-huh. He got suspended, so that could hurt them in the first game, maybe.
Well, maybe in the first game, I don't see it. Baylor, yeah, possibly. But if they get past that, they get Howard back, then they're back to business as usual.
Right.
But I think that zone defense, if you are not a good outside shooting team or you're having an off night from outside, I mean, that defense can make it really, really difficult for you to score points. So Kansas, Syracuse. I still think Purdue with their length. At one point, Purdue looked like one of the best teams in the country, a top five team. They got knocked out, I think, in the second round of the Big Ten.
They won the Big Ten championship. I mean, they tied for the Big Ten title.
Well, they tied
Michigan
for the
State.
Big Ten title, but then they lost in the tournament early. And Michigan State obviously ended up winning it. But I think Purdue is still a team that that potentially can find themselves in a national championship game. And then Virginia Tech. Then Virginia Tech's another one. I like LSU, but LSU's just going through so much right now.
It's very volatile.
Yeah, it's just you never know which team you're gonna get. So, if you're asking which team I think can win a national championship, that's not a one or a two seed. I would, as much as I love Syracuse, I think that bracket is tough for them.
Yeah,
I would pick Purdue. I would pick Purdue or Kansas.
What's crazy is no mention of Kansas, again, checks all the boxes. Great coach, elite recruits. You know, like it's all the reasons why you'd pick Kansas. The other teams, maybe I'm biased because I saw this team in person last year. But Nevada last year had a lot. They have a lot of 6'7" guys that all do the same thing. They run around. They shoot threes like crazy. They won two games in the tournament last year. They have a draw with Michigan, where they might be the more athletic team in the second round as a 7-2 matchup if they can get past Florida. I think Nevada's a really dangerous team. But everyone's going to overlook Buffalo because no one knows anything about them. Mm-hmm. But this is a team that earned a 6 seed out of the MAC. How many teams are good enough to earn a 6 seed out of the MAC? So I think Buffalo's really dangerous that whole bracket for Gonzaga is really tough. Florida State's good. You know, Murray State's good. Marquette's got a score. Syracuse, you like Syracuse a lot.
Yeah.
Texas Tech is a great defensive basketball team. Michigan is extremely well coached. That's a tough bracket down there in the West. Florida State, it's just hard to see. I think your question, Nick, is really, really hard because I would bet everything I own on a team on the one seed line or the two seed line winning the national championship.
I'm just looking forward.
I would take – ones. Do you want the field? How about this? The field or ones to win the national title?
I'm taking the ones.
I would take the ones.
Yeah, me too. It's tough, but outside of the ones or the twos, let's say the field or the one and twos, because you have some twos that can honestly win it.
Well, we all said that we would take just the ones. We don't even need the twos. We would still take the ones.
Yeah.
And that's even tougher of a bet for us, right?
Okay, if we're just taking the ones, I'm taking the field. because I'm taking the twos.
That's a good bet. You want to put some shekels
in this?
Duke or the field?
Well, take the field.
I got Michigan State winning it, so the field.
Well, an individual, but picking.
Well, heck, you got UK winning it all.
Most complete team in the tournament, I think. No weakness.
Oh, I think
they do got a weakness.
I think North Carolina is far more complete.
Coach Cal is the weakness.
Well, that and they don't have a point guard that can shoot.
Exactly.
And
you're going to say Coach Cal's the weakness, but you're going to praise Bill Self?
Bill Self is a phenomenal basketball
coach.
No,
what I'm saying is that you said.
What are you talking about?
Who Coach Cal is that they are a 2-seed.
Who underachieves more? Bill Self, because they both have one national title, historic programs, elite recruits. I would say Bill Self spits up the bit more than California.
No, that was a long time ago.
But that wasn't your question. Your question was, beside the 1 and 2 seeds, who do you think, like lower seeds?
Yeah.
And so I picked Kansas. I'm not saying that, you know, Bill Self is just
Bill. Self has been to the Elite Eight and the Final Four 3 straight seasons.
So
this guy does not. This was early in Bill Self's career that he was failing in the tournament early, and they lost one time to Northern Iowa when Northern Iowa had all those guys that you can't pronounce their names. Remember?
But I think
like the second round as a 1 seed. They lost to an 8. He has since then put all of that to bed. Here is Final Four, Elite Eight, second round, Sweet 16, National Championship runner up, Elite Eight. Second round, Sweet 16, national title.
I think
those are his last 12 tournaments. They go deep every year. Almost.
What happens is with Bill Self is that just about every year they're picked to be in a Final Four or win it all, and he doesn't win it, with the exception of 1 year. And I think that's where. And then you have some of these years where he just gets put out early. That's what people look at, and they say, well, Bill Self, he's underachieved because each and every year. And we could say that about Coach Cal, too. But each and every year, he's come in with this monster recruiting class and the players that he's had at his university, and you've only got one national championship. That's why we can say the same thing about Coach Cal.
Well, what's also the national championship that Bill Self won is because he totally outdid John Calipari in that exact game.
But I mean, say that's why he's going to – their disadvantage is Coach Cal. After I saw that Tennessee game, I just – And I like Coach Cal, but he's just not an elite guy.
You
lost that game for your guy.
The other thing is Higgins. Higgins is
why
not
are you
a
looking at
shooter.
Me like that?
Chase, can we get Calipari booked on the show?
I mean, outside of Kentucky fans, Nick, you're the only.
He's actually coming on the Chase McCabe show on Saturday. Sorry.
You got any other guests you want to promote?
Roger Goodell.
Reggie White. Dana White.
Yeah, Dana White.
Reggie White.
Dana White is actually coming.
The late great Reggie White.
R.I.P. Reggie. Yeah. Yeah, Nick, I'm serious. Outside of Kentucky fans, you're like the only guy I know that thinks Cal's like an elite level basketball. He's a very good basketball.
Do you
coach.
Think he's an elite level coach, or do you think he's just a good?
He thinks
like
he's top.
Really
he's
coach.
Top 5 in the country.
Oh, it's ridiculous. He's not even top 5 in his own bracket.
Yeah.
Let me see the bracket.
Hold on.
Let me see the bracket.
Hold on, Nick. Seriously.
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Let me see the bracket.
Dead serious.
Yeah. John Calipari is a top 5 coach.
John Calipari is the.
I put him a top 10. Yes.
John Calipari is the third best coach in his own bracket.
No, I had Krzyzewski, Williams, Izzo, Jay Wright. I had top 5. I had 4 guys ahead of him.
He is the third best coach in his Midwest bracket.
You guys can drug test me during the break. That's fine.
Roy Williams, Bill Self are both better coaches in this bracket.
You sure you ain't been drinking no Tito's?
No, that'll be 11:15 when we get this party started. What's the first game we got coming up today at 11:15?
Here's the question. Name North Carolina's weakness. That's the thing. Even Duke has a weakness, right? Duke doesn't shoot the ball well from the outside.
Yeah.
What is North Carolina's weakness? Zero. There's nothing. They got veterans. They got front court. They got the national title coach. They got one-and-done point guard. They got everything.
What scares me about Carolina is when they go up and down and they start missing shots. Because they love to get a shot off within, like, the first 15, 20 seconds of a possession. Uh-huh. If they go cold, a lot like Auburn, then all of a sudden it gets a little worrisome.
But they have something Auburn doesn't have, which is Luke May – You know, they can go into the post and slow it down if they need to. And what happens in the tournament, especially in the Elite Eight when they'd be playing Kentucky, is the game comes to a screeching halt. Nobody runs in the Sweet 16 in the Elite Eight.
You know the team that really doesn't have any weakness, and it's Virginia to me.
That's a good point.
But it's just like, will Virginia make it?
It's the stigma of Bill Self early in his career is, hey, Tony Bennett can't do it.
Well, if you're going to kill Calipari for underachieving, then Virginia should get killed with Tony Bennett.
Yeah, they have
Big difference. No one-and-done athletes for Virginia. None. They don't recruit any athletes like
Even
Kentucky
a bigger
does.
Reason. They have guys that stick around for 3 or 4 years.
No. That's totally backwards. He does more with less.
But if they have,
he wins more games with lesser talent.
Yeah, I know the recruit level is different, but if they're a one or a two every year, mm-hmm. and they have guys that stick around for multiple years,
for the last couple of years, they've been one or twos.
He absolutely needs to break through and prove that the last year's thing against UMBC is the anomaly. The year that Michigan State, I think, as a seven seed, went to the Final Four, they beat Virginia as a two seed. Has to break through. Tony Bennett needs to get that respect. There's no question. He's got some of that Bill Self
this
early in his career.
The year he does.
But as a coach, Tony Bennett gets way more out of less than almost any of these coaches. He has four ACC regular season championships. That puts him fourth all-time in ACC
all
history.
All-time.
All-time. The only guys ahead of him are like Coach K, Dean Smith, and Roy Williams. Like, that's it. Like, he's one of the great ACC coaches already, and he's only been there for, like, what, 9-10 years? So he needs to break through. But he does more with less than any of these teams, any of these
time,
guys.
All-time.
Well, let's hope he doesn't break through this year and get to the Final Four, because if he does, it might come at the expense of Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Volunteers. Coming up next, Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM NFL analyst. What does he make of the Titans' offseason so far? And will we have any more acquisitions before the draft? Find out. That's coming up next on Morning Drive. All right, welcome back in, 8:32. It's a Thursday morning. We're live this morning, Morning Drive from Bridgestone Arena, the Predators and the Penguins tonight. But to get some football analysis as to what John Robinson has done so far and what could be on the verge of happening over the next couple of days and weeks, we welcome in Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM NFL analyst and NFL insider. Adam, good morning. How are you?
Guys, good to talk to you today.
Great to have you in. I know you're pressed for time. We'll get right to it. So far, John Robinson, a lot of people of the belief he's had a really good offseason, filling needs, not overspending, and finding really those quality players at the right price. How would you evaluate his free agency to date, and do you think he's got any more moves left?
Yeah, well, I mean, overspending is relative to what really the market, and Robinson came out and spent big on Roger Saffold. The concern was there, from what I understand, the Bills were involved, and the Titans, if they want to get Saffold, they had to give him a monster contract, and they did that. You could say they overpaid, but as long as he plays as well as he has in the past, you're not worrying about what you're paying. It's all about performance. And then, you know, Adam Humphries was a guy that I did some reporting on last week. There were about half a dozen teams involved, and quite frankly, there were other teams talking to people close to Humphries that were willing to actually pay more. Humphries now will be their slot receiver. They've got Corey Davis on the outside. They need to upgrade opposite Corey Davis, something that I think Robinson can look toward in the draft. They're not going to get that what's left in free agency. And, you know, we're at the point of free agency now that this is where you get bargains. This is where you could get some underrated players. But you're not likely – other than Kenny Vaccaro, were they able to get that done last year? And boy, that turned out to be a great move. You simply don't get those high-ranking free agents. It's really now you're looking more toward the draft.
So I think, generally there's a national perception of the Titans and Marcus and John Robinson and the free agent signings and all this stuff. But it feels like we sort of have just in 1 year glossed over the fact and accepted that Mike Vrabel is clearly the answer. It might be the reason why the Titans will be picked ahead of the Texans. Obviously, the offensive line for Houston is a big concern as well. What are your thoughts and what are the opinions nationally of Mike Vrabel? And is he just sort of established himself very quickly in 1 year as a good head coach moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, you need time to evaluate a head coach. It's never about 1 year. It's about three or four. Mike's off to a good start. He's got total command, total respect to the players, which is what the belief around the league was about him coming in. And everyone knows about the relationship between Vrabel and John Robinson, and that's not a secret. You know, the two men know each other from New England. Ja got someone who he trusted, and so far so good. But, you know, the roster needs some upgrades. John's done a very good job as a general manager. The big thing we didn't talk about, Marcus Mariota, that is to me the total key for this team to make the playoffs. To have a chance to be a wild card team or to have a chance to win the AFC South, though I think the Colts are in a better position to, but to take that next jump, to be a solid playoff team, Marcus Mariota, A, has got to stay healthy, which has been a major problem for him. They've got to protect him better, and he just has to play better. That to me is a concern. Now, then let's not forget, Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, has not called plays before, from what I understand. So this is going to be a challenge for him. And don't underestimate the addition of Todd Downing, who is now going to coach tight ends. He's a guy that's really highly thought of around the league, and That was a pretty significant hire for them. And my sense is from talking to people that he'll probably help Arthur Smith out quite a bit because he's been a play caller before. He's been a quarterback's coach, a really good developer of quarterbacks, so that was a really good addition. But overall, there's certainly some questions with this Titans team. Let's not underestimate that. But the roster overall is pretty good. But I think it really starts with a quarterback. He's got to play better.
Now, Adam, a two-part question for you real quickly. Based upon what you just said about the quarterback, they've addressed somewhat their needs on the defensive side of the ball, defensive end, going to get Cameron Wake. I know he's not a long-term. He's more so of a short-term. Based upon that, do you think now they have the ability to put more on the offensive side of the ball to help Marcus off via the draft? And then, two, where does this put the Titans as far as the AFC South? Does this put them closer to Indianapolis, or there's still that big gap between Indy, the Titans, and Houston?
Yeah, Derek, I think the issue here is that you mentioned Cameron Wake, who's a tremendous leader. I know for the talking to the Dolphins in the past, I mean, they absolutely love the guy. What a story coming out of Penn State. Went to the CFL. He's been a terrific football player and a leader. But, he's 37 years old. So to expect him to be a guy who's going to make a major impact in terms of sack production and pressure, I think that's, you got to wait and see. Now, Harold Landry now being a full-time player is a guy that I know they absolutely love, who's certainly flashed. Now he's got to play a lot with Morgan unsigned, and we'll see if they approach him. And obviously, Arakpo's retiring. Defensively, Casey's a phenomenal football player, one of the most underrated defensive players in the National Football League. The front seven should be pretty good. The cornerback position's got to be better. It's got to be more consistent. Byard's a star that, as we all know in tennis, in Nashville, how good he is, but I think nationally not a lot of people know about. Yeah, I don't worry too much about the defense. I think Dean Pease being back and with Vrabel there, I think they'll be fine defensively. Offensively, it's got to be more consistent. And I think, to me, heading into the draft, they just need more playmakers at wide receiver. I mean, they've got one guy, Corey Davis, who needs to be more consistent. We know about a little bit of an injury history. Talented guy, but he entered his third year. Typically, this is where receivers take off in their third or fourth year, especially former first-round picks, as they start to learn the league. I just think and Delanie Walker, we didn't mention him. I mean, he's coming back from a significant injury that they've got. And Jonnu Smith coming back from his ACL injury. That I'm told they're not going to have him until training camp, so... The other thing we need to mention here, and this is going to help Marcus Mariota, is Derrick Henry. Can he continue that tremendous play down the stretch? I mean, this is something we had not seen from him. Where let's face it, quite frankly, for 2.5 seasons, he looked like he was going to be a bust. And then all of a sudden, as he said, coming out of the bye, he studied his tape, and he looks like a player. If they can rely on him, he'll help Marcus Mariota. But I think overall, guys, when we analyze this team, there's still some questions. And to end it, just on this discussion about where they're at, I still think the Colts are better. Now, the Colts have questions, by the way. The roster is clearly not good enough to be a Super Bowl team. Mm-hmm. But when you have a superstar quarterback and you protect him well, look how great the Colts' offensive line was. And when you guys look at the Colts over the years, how many times did you say, boy, the Colts' offensive line is bad, but Chris Ballard has done a phenomenal job of understanding it starts with the offensive line.
Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM NFL analyst. Good stuff as always, Adam. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
Guys, thank you.
You got it. You guys surprised. I think the number is roughly $77 million. Chris Ballard has not been that active in free agency.
I'm not too surprised. I think they probably kicked the tires on a few guys that were the more notable free agents early on. But I think once that didn't materialize to anything, I think he's more so of a, now I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to allow these guys to go test the market and say he might be the one that goes and get a Justin Houston. Because now Justin Houston, he wanted 13, and now we can get it for 10 or 9.
And he's got the money to
exactly.
spend.
Exactly, and I got the money to spend. I'm just going to go out there and get free agents.
Really interesting note there from him is that he said the Colts still have rosters problems and they're not close to being a Super Bowl roster, mm-hmm. which means you can catch them. You may not beat him, and certainly we know the history of the Titans versus Andrew Luck, but it means they're catchable. And if you play with the best defense in the AFC and you get a good running game and Marcus is more protected and more efficient, they're not far off, right? They were only a game back of the Colts last year. So it's not like the division – and listen, what were we saying about Jacksonville 2 years ago, right? like, oh, best team in the division, no question. And then they finish in last place. So it's so volatile. It's so year to year. I think what's fascinating is we spent the entire offseason last year discussing the controversy of one thing, the head coach. Mm-hmm. Super controversial, right? They win a playoff game, they fire the coach. Super controversial press conference and hiring, and, oh, they bring in Vrabel 32nd in defense in Houston. And now, not a word. When we think about Titans topics for the show and we come up with ideas, where's Mike Vrabel on this list?
Never discussed.
Never even comes up.
Huh? Yeah.
And that's and it's because I think people are like, yep, he's the guy. Now, he needs to keep winning, and we need to see growth and progress. There were certainly some games where they played down to the competition, Buffalo, right? So they're going to have to be sort of like the Preds are inconsistent this year. They had some inconsistencies. They played up to the competition. But I think we all sort of have bought into Mike Vrabel, and we believe in Mike Vrabel as the head coach. That's the thing we talked about every day last year, and now it's not even a topic.
We do believe in him as the head coach, and I think the thing is everybody believes he's I hate to use the cliche leader of men, but like he commands respect. Mm-hmm. But do we know one way or the other if he is a very good X's and O's guy?
Well, you don't do you have to be as the head coach?
No. And hopefully we never have to find out.
Because so what are some of the narratives? Bill Belichick is a genius.
Yeah.
Andy Reid gets out coached in big spots.
Uh-huh. But is also an labels. Offensive. But is also considered an offensive genius, sort of too.
But never can be. He's never labeled a guy that can like think on his feet. Give him the bye week. He's unbelievable coming off of it. What do we know about Vrabel the tactician?
I think Vrabel the tactician is what he was as a player, which is he is great at developing talent. I think he can take a player like Jadeveon Clowney, and mold him into a star, right? Like, I think he can take – I think the guys who benefit the most from Vrabel are Jayon Brown, Rashawn Evans, Harold Landry. I mean, that's what Mike Vrabel did for all those years is just outplay people from a technician standpoint, right? Like, he wasn't this freak athlete coming out of Ohio State. So I think he is a great – tactician on an individual player basis. Well, I don't know if he can draw up an entire scheme on a defense and out-scheme somebody, but –
And I think that's what you were saying, Nick. Is he from an X's and O's standpoint, not necessarily from a developmental standpoint? And from an X's and O's standpoint, I don't want to have to find out. Honestly, I really don't.
It's not really his job, right?
Because you know, when he was the X's and O's guys, we saw what happened. With the Houston Texans, their defense wasn't as good. And now, granted, they dealt with injuries too, but still. And then when he had to make calls. You know, at a point of time last year, it didn't work out particularly well.
The challenges were the ones that were
He is more so of the manager. He's good at managing, being a CEO. He's good at motivating. He's good at, okay, I can help these guys. I can give you some tidbits on what's going to make you better as a player because right. I went through the same thing. But he's not going to be the guy that in the middle of the game, I'm going to draw up these 5-10 plays, and here, this is what you do, and this is going to work. He's not that guy. He's the opposite of that. That's why he hired Dean Pease.
Right, right. Now, he did have a couple special teams calls that were pretty genius. I mean, he had a couple, you know, the Crookshank touchdown, the fake punt. I mean, those are the coach going, hey, I want to run the fake punt here, right? I mean, that's the coach. So
beat Belichick and Andy Reid, or Belichick and Doug Peterson in year one.
He is not he's not an offensive guy, so he's never going to drop offensive game plans. But I bet you he and Pease sit in that room together, and he's going, I really like this style of a blitz, or I really like that. And then Pease is the great veteran that goes out and executes it. But I think every player on defense gets better from being around Mike Vrabel. Because he develops those guys.
Coming up next, it is time for another installment of the world-famous Stick to Sports. That's next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, 8:49. We'll get to Stick to Sports in just a moment. We were just talking about brackets and printing out your bracket. Uh-huh. And I just had the braid and I go, do you have a printer at your house? I don't know a single individual. Are printers just like no longer a thing?
Rich people.
I still have a printer, but I mean, I use it very sparingly. If I pay a bill and I want the physical, I want the actual, you know, for my records to put in a file.
Because back in the day,
I print it out and just put it in
my when you would buy a desktop computer, like you would get a printer to come with it.
Yeah.
Now everybody has a MacBook.
Does anybody got a desktop?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Who has got desktops?
Nope.
I gave mine away.
I do.
You have desktop at the house?
Yep.
Do you use it?
Yeah. I use it for a lot of like audio and like studio stuff.
See, when I had mine, my daughter would use it to do a lot of editing and stuff like that, but nobody else really used it. I ended up giving it to Marcy. She would use it more than I would, because I very seldom. I would just take my laptop and just set it right there next to the desktop.
The thing is like you don't need the printer until you really need the printer.
Yeah, that's why I got a
like,
printer.
Whether it's like W-2s or you really got to have a W-2 to give to your accountant, or you really got to have like a return shipping label, right? Like, oh, we got to print out the shipping label. Like, you don't need it until you really, really need it.
All right, Bucky, let's get to the stick of sports. All right, D-Mace, as always, Stick to Sports, brought to you by the fine folks at
Decorating Den Interior. Stick with the pros and Decorating Den. When you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces, give the fine folks at Decorating Den a call. Or just go on the website at www.decoratingden.com.
Number one.
Who's raising D?
DD.com.
Yeah,
and then,
double D.
And then Nick immediately went to the website.
Yeah, by the way, that website doesn't work.
Good, it doesn't work.
Comes up empty.
Good.
They're locked in our office place.
Number one.
Jason Windus gave his California neighbor something to look at during a dispute over the height of a backyard fence. Naked mannequins having a garden party. Four of the fashion dummies are seated in wicker chairs around a matching table. Another is standing with its arms over its head and shamrocks covering its private parts. A hand-scrawled sign on top of the nearby wooden barrel reads, "Reserved seat for the nosy neighbor that complained about my fence to the city. Quote, they wanted me to tear down my fence to see inside my yard, and now they get to," Windus said. What's the pettiest thing you've done to tick off a neighbor?
Oh, wow.
I try not to tick off neighbors. It's community is – it's important. You got to live around those people, man. Like, you can't – you start upsetting neighbors, and then things can go haywire quickly.
I wish I was your neighbor.
You do?
Yeah.
Why, Chase? Why?
It would be fun because I have a feeling
I'm nice to people?
I would prank him all the time.
Right, but then you end up with stuff happening to your house. Right? Because if you're pranking me, then I'm going to start pranking you, and then the other neighbor gets involved, and then all of a sudden we're all ruining each other's property. And that's not what you want in your neighborhood.
I don't think I've had to do anything petty with my neighbors. I've had cool neighbors.
I used to steal my neighbor's newspaper.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you're so bad.
Because this was when we first bought our townhouse about 12 years ago.
That's just cheap.
He would go to work, but he would have the paper delivered, and he would never pick it up. So they would actually pile up on his porch. Like, the newspaper used to come. Like, remember back in the day when it would rain, they would put the paper in the plastic sleeve? So there'd be three or four of them. I'm like, my man doesn't read the paper. So instead of going over to the gas station and grabbing a paper myself, I'm just going to swipe it off his porch when he's at work.
He never read it anyway.
What I love about this story is I thought when Buck started the story, it was going to be him sitting in the chair naked.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'll give you something to look at. You care about what's going on in my backyard? Here you go, dude.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's the full Monty, man. This is what I do in my backyard and my property.
Never, ever.
Number two.
The thought of that, Buck. Ugh.
I guess you could
say he was Buck naked.
That was not the appropriate amount of silence to let lie under that.
Wow.
For how terrible a joke that was.
I needed to give it a few, let it breathe
Chase,
a little bit.
Can
longer.
We give him what? Minus what?
100. You know what? I tell you
100.
What.
Minus 100.
I will mute his mic for 30 seconds.
That's fine.
Number two.
All right. I'm currently watching a video on YouTube of an Australian, well, I guess all koalas are Australian, but an Australian koala sneaking into a car to cool off in the air conditioning. It was apparently an unoccupied air conditioned car somewhere in Australia, and the koala is relaxing on the leather seats as the owner tries to convince it to leave the car. He's like, he's got his dog in there. The koala is clearly not bothered by the dog. He's pouring water on it to try and get it out of the car. What would you do to remove an unwilling koala,
dude,
from your vehicle?
Koalas are so stinking mean. They are so mean. They look so cute and cuddly, but they are mean, mean, mean. You'd have to lure it out with some food because you do not want to be close to a koala when it gets angry.
A little bit of eucalyptus leaves?
Yeah. Those things are so angry.
Call animal control and let them deal with it. My dog, obviously, my dog's chilling. He's chilling. So call animal control.
The only place this would happen, of course, is in Australia.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if animal control responds to the outback as quickly as they do to, like, Brentwood.
They might.
I would stay away from koalas. They're mean.
Number three.
A Massachusetts fourth grader has built a mosaic tribute to New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady entirely out of Rubik's Cubes. Maxim Lin's creation, a head and shoulders image of the six-time Super Bowl champion, made out of 999 cubes, took about 2 months to complete and even longer to plan. It's encased in a 7-foot tall by 5-foot wide wooden frame the 10-year-old Westwood boy built with his father. Max, who can solve a Rubik's Cube in about 13 seconds, says the puzzle cubes and Brady are two of his favorite things, so the project made perfect sense. What's the most impressive thing you did as a 10-year-old?
First of all, this guy's going to have a really great social life when he gets to high school, first of all.
That's cool.
Most impressive 10-year-old accomplishment? I came in third place in the school spelling bee.
That's pretty good. Good for you. This picture of this Rubik's Cube is actually quite amazing.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty amazing, like the color pattern. It's about, like, what'd you say it was, like, probably 8 feet tall?
7.
7 feet tall? That thing's huge. Really well done. But, again, clearly a huge social life for this young man.
Yeah. He'll be getting stuffed in a dumpster.
I have no idea what I accomplished when I was 10.
Yeah, I guess moving on to the next grade.
Yeah. I passed the class. I don't know.
Number four.
A Texas homeowner who reported seeing a few snakes under his home actually had dozens of rattlesnakes living beneath his house. Country Snake Removal, which was called in to help, said the homeowner crawled underneath his home after strong winds disrupted his cable television service. He saw a few snakes, quickly crawled out, and contacted the snake removal company. Workers later pulled 45 rattlesnakes from underneath the home near Albany, about 150 miles west of Dallas. You found 45 rattlesnakes under your house.
I wouldn't go to that house for a very long time.
Is there any way to monetize it?
Man, I'm surprised that he even was able to get back out.
Yikes.
You know? That could have been one of those situations you see in those scary movies where a guy or a girl goes underneath the house and it's like,
you're stuck snake, down there?
Like Snakes on a Plane with Samuel Jackson.
Except for that wasn't a horror movie. Yeah. It was a comedy.
And you get stuck in a space you can't get out of.
Dude, Snakes on a Plane is one of the funniest movies. I love that movie.
I don't know how that dude got out, but yeah, I wouldn't go back to the house for a good
while. I don't know if you guys remember this, when Snakes on a Plane came out, that there was this thing that you could do where you could have Samuel L. Jackson call your friends to promote the movie. So like you could go to a website.
Did he curse?
Yeah, you go to a website, you type in your friend's cell phone number and they would get a phone call and it'd be a voicemail and it'd be like, "Yo, this is Samuel L. Jackson. Go to the movies and watch Snakes on a Plane."
What's in your wallet?
There's a whole cult following with Snakes on a Plane.
Are these like the Antonio Brown like video messages that he's sending out?
Is that what is the, I don't know. It was put on by the promotions company that was like running the film, obviously, that did the movie.
I need to figure out the exact website that there's celebrities that are being paid, you know, sums of between $500 and like $5 to deliver personalized video greetings. I'm surprised you guys haven't seen this.
Awesome.
A rival sports talk radio show in New York City sent one to Mike Francesa.
That's sort of what the Fire app was going to be before the Fire Music Festival, right? Like, that was supposed to be on-demand celebrity stuff, right? Like,
yes.
It's actually a really good idea for an app. Skip all the agents, skip all the fees, go right to the celebrity, and you can get Ja Rule to come to your birthday party or something. I don't know.
Hey, quickly, for those who possibly picked UK to go far, PJ Washington, it doesn't look good for him. They put him in the hard cast now. He's in the cast.
Oh, really? They say he was going to play yesterday.
And he's not playing. So
they're saying he's not playing? He's out?
I believe he's out. And you pick UK, to go all the way. So if PJ Washington isn't playing at all, they said it's not a fracture. It's not a fracture, but when you put somebody in a hard cast, I mean,
yeah, I mean,
is that not a fracture or I don't know.
As of yesterday, Cal said he was playing.
Yeah.
So.
All right, that'll do it for Stick to Sports. Coming up next, we will begin the fourth and final hour of the show, talking March Madness. Rob Doster, NBC Sports, will join us on the other side here on Morning Drive, live from Bridgestone Arena, ESPN 102.5 The Game.